as we go to Crease Lightning inside the pipes, and we always talk goaltending. Woodley from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine joins us again. Woods, how are you, my man?
I'm good. I think I need to stop working for you so I can just enter your contest.
Well, you know what? Are you an NHL 16 player?
I suck at it. My kids continuously kill me at these games. I'm just kind of one of those, you know, grumpy old men that likes to keep his kids entertained on the Xbox One by getting beat on a regular basis.
Okay.
So does that count? I'm not sure.
Well, I don't know if you'd want to enter, because this is to say who's the best of the best, and I don't know if you want to get schooled three times in a row, right? So that's the thing.
My 8-year-old kills me, so I'm thinking maybe I'm out on that.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's fair. But you could come by for the beer. That's the advantage. Majot is,
that part, yeah.
Majot is our TSN Jason Gregor Show representative in this, so he's pretty good at gaming. So we're hoping Majot has a good run in the tournament. We'll see.
Nice.
It will be a lot of fun. Now, speaking of having good runs, Cam Talbot is on an excellent run. And really, I was breaking down the numbers. Outside of six games this year, he has been very, very consistent. He's been a .930 save goal percentage since December 14th. But, you know, I thought he started okay. Then he seemed to lost his confidence a little bit. He was reacting before, trying to think, uh-oh, these guys aren't going to make the play, so he's doing too much. He really seems to have worked on things for that month in November, because since then he's got the second-best goaltending save percentage since December 14th. Corey Crawford, the only one better.
Yeah, I mean, not a bad run. And, you know, I mentioned this last week. I mean, amid all the misery for Oilers fans, the bright light has been – he appears to be the real deal. And, you know, you've got to give credit to the goalie coach, Justin Schwartz, for the work they did in that month off. When I talked to Cam early in the season, you know, there really was an element of not so much breakdowns in the system, but, you know, as they tried to learn a new system as a team under a new coach, and he tried to learn their habits and the new system as well, there were times, he admitted, where, you know, it was hard to trust guys to do their jobs. And so you, as you mentioned, Jason, you try and do too much. You're trying to, you know, worry about what other guys are doing and not just about what you're doing. And there was an element of that in his play early. I think good on him and good on Schwartz for being able to work through it during that month when, well, there's a lot of pressure on him. I mean, they acquire him to be a number one guy, and within a month he's lost the job to Anders Nilsson. But I love the way he responded. And what I like, I think Oilers fans should be excited about moving forward is, yes, maybe there's an element of a hot streak here. Is he going to be, you know, like you said, right there, top of the league, number two behind Corey Crawford for the rest of his career? Yeah, there may be ups and downs. But the way he plays is kind of sets himself up so that the downs aren't as steep. I mean, he doesn't, you know, we talked about this last week with Mrazek, with Ward, with some of these other guys who were on hot streaks. I worried about them lasting because the way they play. The way Talbot plays is much more sustainable. He plays a more neutral game, an inside-out approach. He's not overly aggressive, and, you know, it just kind of lends itself to a little more consistency. Are there still going to be highs and lows within that? Yeah, but I don't expect the swings to be as wild as they are with other more aggressive, more athletic-reliant guys. Not that Talbot, you know, hasn't, as we've seen, doesn't have the capability of making spectacular saves, but what I like about his game is I don't think he puts himself in situations where he relies on those types of saves as often as some other guys. So, you know, a lot of promise in the right now, and I think, you know, everybody says goalies are voodoo, but I think when you really take a look at how this guy plays compared to other guys who have had, you know, bigger highs and bigger lows, you're looking at a guy who can maintain, you know, a steadier level of play throughout.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. Kevin, Braden Holtby, 40 wins, you know, fastest, and he's on pace to break Marty Brodeur's single-season win record, but he's actually, since January 1st, like, his save percentage is sub .910. Now, this guy, I think, at January, many people thought was a lock to win the Vezina. Right now, I'm not even sure he would be one of the three finalists. His numbers have gotten worse. What's the difference you've seen his game since the calendar turned to 2016?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think the team play has slipped, and I agree with you on the Vezina front. I mean, and it's really funny because, you know, he built his reputation with a really strong second quarter, and people were comparing his season to Carey Price last year and talking in terms of Hart Trophy. And the Vezina just seemed to be a slam dunk. And I'm surprised at how many people are still talking about the Vezina as a slam dunk for Braden Holtby when you look at the numbers you just mentioned. I mean, overall on the year, he's down to .922, outside the top 10 in the NHL, and kind of right down near his career average. So amid a bunch of talk about, how this guy has taken another step, he's kind of hovering right around where he has been throughout his career. You know, they've struggled as a team. They have such a lead over in the East and within their division. I think they've struggled as a team to maintain kind of the defensive posture that they had early under Barry Trotz. And the balance for me with Holpe is this is a guy that likes workload, that thrives on being busy, that doesn't like to take a day off. And yet there are have been times where you wonder if they've overworked him. So if you're the Capitals and you've seen them work in Grubauer more and more here, I think you worry less about him breaking Brodeur's record by getting a lot of starts and focus on trying to find a way to keep him sharp without necessarily having to keep him busy. And if that means resting him for an extended stretch and then winding him up again in the playoffs, because he really does thrive on that extra workload. So, you almost got to shut him down and then give him that busyness right down the stretch and into the playoffs, as opposed to lessening his workload on a day-to-day basis. I'm not sure if that helps his performance. So in terms of his game, I haven't seen a lot change. I just think they've exposed him more defensively. And of course, that brings us to the Vezina discussion. Corey Crawford's a guy who constantly doesn't get enough respect because the team plays so good in front of him. Yet Holtby has been, you know, kind of deemed this Vezina favorite from the middle of the season onwards, despite playing behind a Trotz system where he is insulated a fair bit. Certainly the talent in terms of the defensive names in front of him aren't as good as what Corey Crawford has in Chicago. But when you take a look at the shot quality based on distance, at least, there isn't that big a difference. Braden Holtby hasn't seen that much of a workload difference. So it'll be interesting to see where the voters kind of go and where the finalists, you know, win their name. But you know, right now it's hard to argue he's in the top three, and Corey Crawford, a guy who hasn't got a lot of respect over the years, hard to kind of keep him out of this conversation right now.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. Kevin, one player going opposite direction of Holtby is Pekka Rinne in the Nashville Predators. He did not have a great start, especially the second quarter, but he's really turned it up as of late.
Yeah, and it's interesting to, you know, I mean, a lot of people, you know, from the advanced and the analytics side, and their points are well taken, that on a whole, not being busy doesn't, in other words, not seeing a lot of shots is not hard or not harder for goaltenders. But for some goaltenders, it seems to be. And when you take a look at the numbers for Pekka Rinne, he is a guy who struggles when he's not seeing a lot of shots. He struggles to find his rhythm. He relies, again, he's one of those guys that relies on a lot of aggressiveness and relies on his athleticism and incredible mobility for his size to kind of make up for that aggressive positioning. And he feels like he's on top of his game when he's playing a very active style. Well, it's hard to play that style seeing 20 shots a night. And I don't think it's a coincidence. He's 5-0-2 in his past seven. And the one thing that's remained consistent among there is they're giving up more shots. There's a 39-shot night. There's another one, I think, 37, 38 shot. Overall in that stretch, they're almost 32 shots a game and never less than 28. You look at his struggles before then, and he had nights where 6 goals on 19 shots, 4 goals on 22 shots. He is not a guy who excels, and frankly, he's a guy who admittedly struggles when he's seeing kind of low 20s and below in terms of shot volume, and he tries to force things. He gets more aggressive, as he told me earlier this season. Every puck that's dumped into his zone, doesn't matter if it's up on the glass or on a hard rim, he's trying to go out and get it. And anytime you're trying to force things as a goaltender, I don't know that that's a great mindset to have, but that's how he tries to deal with not being busy. So if you're the Nashville Predators, on one hand, you're saying, all right, we got Pekka Rinne, the Pekka Rinne back right now. He's on a great run. And on the other hand, you're thinking, well, we don't really want to be giving up, you know, 30 to 39 shots a night. Ideally, we'd like to be a better defensive team and in the low 20s. So, you know, Peter Laviolette said it when he was in here, you know, about a month ago. Is, you know, I understand he struggles with low shots, but what are we going to do? Tell guys to, you know, give up more shots from the blue line and try to create those easy feeler shots? It just doesn't work that way. So it's an interesting conundrum if you're the Predators. You're happy that your guy's back in rhythm and playing well, and yet you've got to be a little nervous about what happens when you do inevitably try and tighten things up defensively going into the playoffs.
Kevin, have you done a study on not necessarily the amount of shots, but the amount of quality chances? And if a guy has 22 shots and there's a lot of quality chances, maybe he's not feeling the puck as much, so he's not set when those high-quality chances come. Is that why a guy like Rennie maybe struggles? Whereas when he sees 36, it might not be a lot more quality chances. It's just a lot more feeling of the puck.
Well, yeah, and that's the rhythm thing, right? Like, so say you give up 10 high-quality chances in both games. In one of them, that's half your chances. In the other, it's a third. And I think more than just the math and the percentages there, you're exactly right. It's those feeler shots, the 99%ers, as I like to call them, the ones that let you just feel comfortable with your game and, like you said, comfortable getting set, easy ones to kick away into the corner. And, you know, when you don't, they're the kind of things that help rhythm goaltenders find their rhythm. And Rene is definitely what I call a rhythm goaltender, a guy who moves a lot more than he necessarily has to around his crease. And you know, those are the guys that are more dependent on those feeler shots and feeling good about their game and can try to force things when they don't feel the puck for long stretches. And it's a really tough balance to find. I think it is very particular to certain styles of goaltender. And yet if you happen to play that style and your team decides they're going to play this way defensively, it's kind of just on you to figure out a way. And you know, Pekka kind of felt like he was getting there midway through the season, that he was finding ways to adjust to keep himself in games where he wasn't as busy. But like I said, when one of those things is handling every puck dumped into your zone, I think there's an element of forcing it, and that can creep into your game as well. It's just, it is a tough balance for these guys to find, and you're exactly right. It's not necessarily about, you know, that there's a higher percentage of high-quality shots that he's facing, and that affects your save percentage. It's also about those feelers that let them feel good about, you know, being in the game with easy saves.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. Kevin, one last one. Here we are into March now, and teams start looking ahead to next season for goaltending. Now, the Oilers clearly look like they've addressed their goaltender by acquiring Talbot last summer. The Calgary Flames are a team that are near the bottom of the standings. Hiller's contract's done. Ramos' contract, I doubt you know, they bring him back. So they got Johnny Ortio, who I don't think they're going to go into the season as a starter. Who do you see as potential matches for the Calgary Flames?
It's really interesting to kind of see how things are shaking down. Now, clearly, it looks like they're going to be into the trade market. I know they kicked the tires on Frederick Anderson when he was made available around the league early this season. But as we've talked about before, the price tag was exceptionally high at that time because the Ducks weren't comfortable with what they had. They weren't urgent about moving him because they weren't entirely comfortable with what they had behind him. In other words, they kind of felt like they might still need him, especially with John Gibson, you know, not being able so far in his career to stay healthy for long periods of time. So they're trying to win a Stanley Cup, obviously, there, and they want to have kind of both bullets in the holster, so to speak, heading down the stretch. But that changes in the summer. They know they need to make a decision. Everything I'm hearing and all the indications, and even talking to Anderson himself, you expect it to be Freddie Anderson moved. Interesting to see where the price tag goes because he's playing very well right now. If he were to go on a good run in the playoffs, maintain that number one job, you got to think the price tag would be high again. And yet, in the world of goaltending, it's clearly a buyer's market right now, and it'll remain that way in the summer. There aren't very many teams like the Calgary Flames that have nothing going into next season, and there are going to be other options out there. A couple of the ones in Philadelphia, I can't help but wonder what they're going to do with Steve Mason. He has been exceptional there since coming from Columbus. It's taken a while, I think, reputation-wise, to shake the baggage that came with his struggles in Columbus, but statistically, he has. I mean, he's been one of the better goaltenders in the entire league for the past couple of seasons, and yet there seems to be a lack of respect within that organization for what he does and what he's capable of doing, and he's only got a year left on his deal. They seem very high on Michael Neuwirth, who also has a year left on a much cheaper contract in Philadelphia. So you got to wonder if they might look to move Mason. The other name out there is Jaroslav Halak. More and more with Thomas Greiss stealing starts and Yaro under contract for a couple more years at $4.5 million, you're starting to hear rumblings that he's just not happy playing for the Islanders right now. And with Greiss there for one more season, I don't see that changing. So you wonder if Halak is another guy that could be on the move. Last name on the chart is Bobrovsky. Jonas Korpisalo is young, but has shown that he is NHL-ready right now. So as hard as it would be to move a Bobrovsky, just because of the price tag, three more seasons, almost $7.5 million against the cap, end all those health issues. There is a growing sense that, you know, the relationship between Bobrovsky and John Tortorella is not one that's built to last long term, and that the Columbus Blue Jackets may be forced to kind of take a look around the league and see if there's any interest there. Like I said, I can't imagine the return would be high, because as much as I believe he is capable of, and when he's healthy, one of the best goaltenders in the NHL, like he's up there in that just such elite skills that he has, already a Vezina Trophy under his belt. Just so many questions for him right now in terms of the injuries and chronic groin injuries. And it'll be interesting to see if he gets into some games. He's skating now down the stretch to kind of show that he's past it. But I got to think there's a lot of teams. Anytime you have chronic groin injuries, there's probably a lot of teams out there looking at that and wondering, you know, what's the hip situation like with him? Because so often recurring groin injuries tie into structural hip problems. And, you know, you assume Columbus would have looked at that by now. But I'm not so sure, because it's something they've missed on guys in the past. I think of a guy like Pascal Leclaire, who kept popping groins in Columbus, and it wasn't until he was traded to Ottawa that they discovered, oh, yeah, he's got a torn hip labrum, and that's where all the stress is coming from through the groin. So Bobrovsky's another name that I expect to at least be on the market. I just not sure what kind of interest there would be without being able to kind of have a closer look at what an MRI would show in his hips.
Kevin, always good stuff, man. We'll talk to you again next week. Have a great day.
My pleasure. Thanks.